Thank you. So I'm going to be talking about an ongoing project that we've been doing in Morris, Minnesota for the last 3 years, looking at alternative oilseed crops and how we can use them to provide ecosystem services. So the goals of this project are really twofold. The first is the agronomic side of it, so looking at how we can establish what are the best management practices for incorporating these oilseed crops into current cropping systems in the area. The second is trying to understand the pollinator value and ecosystem value that these crops can bring into that agricultural system. So in the last 5-10 years, the topic of pollinator health and pollinator decline has become a lot more mainstream, and people are more aware of it. And so one of the reasons that pollinator health is declining is thought to be lack of high quality pollinator forage material. So in the upper Midwest, specifically in Minnesota where this work was done, about 50% of our land is in agricultural land. And this is low diversity, high intensity agricultural land. So high acres of corn and soybean, which are not considered high quality forage resources for pollinators. We've seen an increase in that land over the last 5 years. We've also seen a decrease in acres of land that would be considered high quality forage for pollinators. So things like CRP, prairie lands, canola acreage, and sunflower acreage. So we want to look at if we start to bring in crops into the agricultural landscape, can we bring in some benefits to those pollinators? So as I said, the study was conducted in Morris, Minnesota, which I didn't point out. The little red star on the map is showing where Morris is, so right in the heart of the corn and soybean agricultural land. It was a 2-year study, and we looked at 9 different oilseed crops. So those crops are spring camelina, spring canola, flax, cramby, echium, borage, calendula, kufia, and sunflower. You may be more familiar with some of them than others. But again, these are all oilseed crops. They have seed oil value for biofuel production, industrial uses, edible oils, cosmetics. So there's a whole different range of values to these crops. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to understand a little bit more about managing them. So we looked at planting date and how planting date impacted both yield, flowering time, and pollinator visitation. The first year of the study was in 2013, where we had 3 planting dates. Our standard date is about mid-May for the area, and then we also had a June and a July planting date. In 2014, year 2 of the study, we were able to add in a 4th planting date in early May. So we had the early May, the standard, and then the June and July planting date. All right, so first let's talk about how planting date affected the yield of each one of these crops. As may be expected, yield varied with planting date. So as you adjust the planting date to different times in the seasons, you see the yield respond to that. But again, what we want to know is how is the yield responding? Is it going up? Is it going down? What kind of flexibility does planting date give us? So we'll start by looking at echium. So this is a graph showing the yield of echium over both years. The yields for the standard planting date are highlighted in black. And those are the yields for both year 1 and year 2 of the study. And then we also have the yield for the May planting date, which again was just in year 2 of the study, and the yield in June and July, again for year 1 and year 2 of the study. All right, so we use the standard date as basically our baseline for yield. So we want to say this is where we expect our yield to be, and then we want to evaluate if planting date increases or decreases the yield. So for echium, now highlighted in purple, you can see the yields that were not significantly different than the yield of our standard planting date. So both with a May and a June planting date, we didn't see the yield decline of that crop, indicating that we have some flexibility in when we can plant the crop into the field. All right, so now let's look at, this is all 9 crops and their yields. Again, the standard date is highlighted in black. And for each one of the crops highlighted in the colors now are the yields that were not significantly different or were actually greater than our standard planting date yield. So for a number of the crops like flax, cramby, echium, borage, and kufia, again, we saw that same trend that we saw with echium, where both the May planting date and the June planting date gave us yields that were not significantly different than our standard planting date yield. For Camelina, we found only our May planting date was equivalent to the standard date. For calendula, we actually found that don't adjust when you plant at all. You have one narrow window to get a good yield off of that crop. And then interestingly, for both canola and sunflower in this study, we saw really high yields with our July planting date. So really a very late season planting date where we were able to get high yields off of these crops. So again, what this tells us is that we really have some flexibility in planting dates that can offer management opportunities to growers for each one of these crops. So looking at a late spring where you can't get into your field until June because it's wet, we might be able to offer some opportunities with some of these alternative crops to come in and still provide economic value to the growers. Okay, so what about the flowers and the pollinators? Well, we'll start with the flowering period. This is a graph showing the standard flowering period for each of the 9 crops. So we're looking at percent flower cover, basically the canopy cover of the different crops throughout their enthesis period. So all the crops are represented in different colors on the graph. And what you'll see is we really start in about late June with camelina and canola flowering. And then in midsummer, so throughout July, is when most of these crops are flowering for us. And then flowering drops off in August and ends kind of late August. So with our standard planting date, if we had all 9 of these crops on the landscape, we're getting about 2 months of flower coverage. Okay, so there's flowers out there. Do the pollinators like them? Well, yes, very much. As Jim mentioned, pollinators like flowers. So this graph is showing insect visitation on each one of those crops. So this is number of insects observed in minutes time by a single observer walking along the edge of one of the research plots. So again, you can see that these pollinator visitation lines very closely mirror what we saw with the flower cover. So when those flowers are out there, we're seeing insect activity. We do see variation in the degree of activity on each crop. So you may notice kind of in pink where the camelina is and flax, the light purple down at the bottom, we're seeing between 5 to 10 insects per minute. So somewhat low counts, especially compared to something like canola, which is our bright yellow spike, echium, which is purple, and then borage in blue, which we're averaging between 30 and 60 insects per minute. So there's definitely some preference of the different pollinators for the different crops that are on the landscape. All right, so how does planting date come into this? Well, now what you're looking at is the enthesis period for the crops for the different planting dates over the 2 years. So we have 2013 and 2014 with standard June and July, and then May, June, and July. And what you can see is, again, probably what's expected, as you shift that planting date later into the season, you just see these big shifts in when those flowers are actually on the landscape. So this is telling us now, instead of just that 2-month period of flowering with our standard date, we can get flowering starting the second week in June, extending all the way into the end of October. So again, it's opening up some flexibility for when we can put those flowers on the landscape for the pollinators. And again, with that, how did the pollinators respond? Well, they were there. When there's flowers in the field, we see high levels of visitation on all these crops. So we see that shift in insect activity mirroring that shift in flowering time. So whenever the flowers are on the landscape, we can get services provided to those pollinators by the flowers. Okay, so what do we do with that information? How do we use it? Well, the goal is to really be able to maximize both that seed yield component and the ecosystem pollinator value component of these crops. So if you think about it on a landscape scale where you have a number of farms in the area, how you might start to make suggestions to growers for different cropping opportunities that are going to provide them a high yield for their land, but also provide a value to the surrounding ecosystem. So you might see that by starting with a crop like camelina that's planted in May, where you're going to have that really early window of flowering, that kind of mid-June, before most of the other plants are going to be flowering out there, get that nice early resource on the landscape, and again, get a good yield from your crop. Something like a standard planted echium, you're going to provide that resource in the heart of summer, a nice long extended flowering period, up to a month and a half to 2 months of flowers. And again, focusing on, we're going to get a good yield with that planting date. You could possibly look at a June planting date for borage, you know, maybe following a winter crop that's off the field by June, come in. And now you're extending that flowering period from the end of, or from August with echium, you're extending it by about 3 weeks with those additional borage flowers. And then finally, you know, our July sunflower did really well. So you come in with a July sunflower, and now you're able to add on an extra 2 weeks of flowering really late into that season. So you're making selections based on which one of these crops are going to provide you a high yield on your land, what's going to fit into your rotation, but you're also putting together this nice picture of continuous flowering throughout the summer, really covering that landscape with flowers. Okay, so in conclusion, with flexible planting dates, we can really provide some different management strategies and opportunities for growers with these alternative crops. The flowers of the oil seeds are really attracted to pollinators. I mean, the activity you see in all of these plots is kind of mind-blowing compared to corn and soybean. And adjusting the planting date can be used to really try and promote continuous flowers throughout the season and provide that nice, stable resource to the pollinating community. Okay, so I would like to thank the, 50 people who have worked on this project throughout its duration. And I'd also like to put a plug, my colleague Matt Tom is speaking Wednesday morning. He's actually going to be talking about the pollen resources that all of these crops provide and the quantity of protein in them. So if you're interested in that, you can wake up early and hear his talk. Okay. Any questions? Yeah.
You seem to equate the term insect and pollinator in your talk. Did you differentiate in that community at all?
We did a little bit, yes. I am not an entomologist, so I use insect, bug, and pollinator to mean the same thing. We actually looked at categories of insects. So we broke our insect counts into honeybees, bumblebees, small bees, flies, butterflies, and beetles. And so we have some idea of which groups of insects are preferring different crops. So there's certain crops that the honeybees and small bees are very drawn to. There's other crops that you see a lot more activity of the syrphid flies. So we tried to focus primarily on the pollinating insects, but we did do some beetle counts in there. Yeah, so you're asking about volunteer seeding of these crops. Because these crops are relatively new and have not been bred to the same extent as our more conventional crops, we do see a lot of seed shatter and volunteer reseeding. So for a couple of the crops, like camelina and canola, we are actually looking at volunteer seeding to get a late season floral resource with those. So we get the early season flowering, reseeding, and then we see reflowering around October. So again, having that late flower resource. As far as sustainability year to year, we do see for the crops, we see some reseeding and regrowth in the spring following the winter, but it's not something that we have looked into at this point. Kufia? Yes. Yeah. Well, you might be able to have it reseed, but again, that's not something that we've done. Yeah. But it's not a perennial.
I'm surprised that pollinators are visiting flax because it has almost zero nectar. So why do insects visit?
Well, so This is our pollinator diversity graph. So you can see the flax bar on there is pretty small, meaning there's a pretty small portion. But we see visitation by flies primarily. We see small bees on there. We see a number of butterflies actually relative to the total number of insects that were on flax. And we've also seen bumblebees and honeybees. Flax does still have pollen, so that's what we think they're foraging for. When you see them on the flowers, they're really wrapped right around those anthers. And flax flowers really early in the morning and then drops its petals. So most of our counts are done midday, but early in the morning is when we'd see most of the visitors on those flax flowers.
Okay, thanks, Carrie.
Thank you.